Welcome to the Umpiring Fast Pitch Softball Podcast. I'm David.
And I'm Pete. And today should be our last episode covering from the OHSAA White Book, Mechanics, Miscues to Avoid. And today we're going to focus on the plate umpire advice. Again, this comes from Ohio, but this is applicable to everyone doing Federation ball. There's nothing state specific here. These are just good rules of thumb, good advice, good rule reminders.
And if you're in a state that has something that says, and they publish something that says different, do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever that is. But these are all pretty benign. So the first one is to keep your pregame conference with the coaches concise. Discussion should be limited to ground rules and the acceptance of the lineup cards. It is not appropriate to issue warnings for... It is not appropriate to issue warnings for issues such as sportsmanship or instruction as to how the coaches should act if they disagree with a call. You are asking for trouble. So this one would be a little different for me. And so Federation ball, of course, what's it supposed to be? You know, according to the manual, we're going to look it up.
Check that out. And so the point here is the other thing that would be where this would be a good reminder to me then would be often I will explain my expectations for the way to address something. So it's not necessarily how they should act if they disagree with the call, but I do find myself putting out the things that say, if there's an appeal or something you want, wait till action is stopped, get time for me and approach the umpire who made the call. And so I might cover that. And so this seems to be suggesting against that and sportsmanship and stuff. Obviously you don't have to say some of those things, but I've also found, I thought that the manual did give some instruction towards, let's say you have two schools you know are rivals and have bad blood and there have been some issues. That's one of those things, you're supposed to research that before you go to a game. Is this a rivalry game? These people had bad blood. Is the championship on the line? Knowing those things going in as to what to expect. And so it's possible that I might have said, hey, let's keep this clean, sportsmanlike, you know, do whatever.
Yeah.
And this is saying don't do that.
So I'll tell you, there are a couple of our JUCO teams that are famous for disliking each other.
Yeah.
And so you really have to have your head on straight about what the rules are. But I said we would get the manual out, and there's a bit of a contradiction here, what seems like it could be construed as a contradiction. So let's just get into it. So first thing that you're supposed to do at the plate meeting with the coaches, so there's pregame with your partner.
Mm-hmm.
There's pregame, before that, you know, first of all, you should probably confirm with your partner, you know, before you go. Make sure everybody knows where they're going. You need to confirm with the school and the administrator, you know, all of that. But this is specifically about plate mechanics at the game. Here's the conference with the coaches. The first thing you should do is introduce yourself and your partner to all in attendance and have the others introduce them. So number one, introductions.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, ask the head coaches to verify that the players are legally equipped and the players' equipment are in compliance with all NFHS rules.
Yes.
I think, what's the exact words you use for this one?
Yeah, are your players legally and properly equipped?
Done. Pretty simple. Review the ground rules. Begin by outlining dead ball areas, then proceed to home plate, third base dugout bench area, outfield fence, and foul poles in the first base dugout bench area. Cover all the openings and obstacles. So, Pete, is this something we cover or is this something we let the head coach of the home team cover?
At least I do it, but I have been informed as part of my pre-game, I'll talk to the coach and identify. I'll ask him, hey, what are the ground rules for this location if I don't know them already?
That's right.
Because of prior investigation, and then I'm the person that says them.
Yeah, that's right. So you get the ground rules from the staff there, whether it's the head coach or whatever, and typically it is.
Site administrator.
Yep, typically it is. But you give them at the plate meeting. So and then number four, and there's only seven, folks. So number four, ask if there are any questions on the rules, especially the re-entry, DP flex, or the EP rules.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've ever done that.
I do, because I saw that, I do if they are playing a DP flex. So I'll identify the lineups. I'll say, you're playing with this many, you have a DP flex, this is going on, you have four subs or whatever else. I'll kind of outline that and I'll say, is this right? And then I'll say, do you have any questions for me regarding DP flex?
Okay.
I ask only because, you know, of that line.
Okay. Then it says, remind teams if there are any questions, only one person, the coach or captain, approaches the umpire responsible for the call in a sporting manner.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little bit of a...
Yeah.
So we'll reread the white book.
Yeah, it could be that he's talking more about... Because it comes right before or right after sportsmanship or instruction how to act if they disagree. So this might be not so much procedure, but like, hey, you need to act civilly. This is for the girls. Gotcha. It's like you're giving him behavior instructions and not mechanics of the call.
Yeah, when perfect. He's pushing. Perfect. That's very, and most likely the case. So thanks for that. Number six, check the lineups from the respective teams. Check each lineup card, including first initial, last name, defensive position, and number of each participant, and hand it back to the coach for a last inspection. When returned to the plate umpire, the lineup is now official. Any changes that take place now will be substitutions and should be marked on the lineup card as such. Remind the coaches the importance of reporting all substitutions to the plate umpire. Once the lineups are confirmed, ask the head coaches whether they wish to make any changes. And then it does specify DP flex rule here. It's not the only change you can make, but it's right. The most likely changes that you would see.
You may want to establish at the beginning and then abolish so that you can reestablish later.
I've known coaches to do that.
Yeah, just one or two.
Yeah. So there's a note here for fast pitch. Make sure that if there is a DP flex, there are 10 players. And if no DP flex, there are only 9 players. I'm just going to leave that alone. And then number 7, review with all in attendance the expectations regarding sporting behavior and wish them all the best of luck. And then all of that, I found out yesterday, the hope and expectation is that is a 3-minute discussion. Hey, coaches, I'm David. My partner's Pete. Yep, good to meet you, coach. Yep, good to meet you, coach. We're not probably at the state tournament, already, so I don't have 17 captains on either side, to have to introduce themselves, but a couple of captains and that kind of thing, and then right into it, so let's just get her done. All right, Pete, what's the next one?
Your in-between innings position is on the foul line extended on the side of the team taking the field for defense. And it doesn't say, but you're on that side and you're facing the team coming out on offense.
Yeah.
This is not the fence, not the crowd. No.
That's right. This is a hard one to visualize. So I always think about here in Federation Ball for sure, the on-deck batter is in front of her dugout. Mm-hmm. And so I should be on that foul line extended watching her swing. That's kind of how I keep myself in the right spot, The team that's getting ready to hit, it's that line, the line in front of their dugout is the one that gets extended past the plate, toward the backstop. Yeah. And that's where you're standing. Watch the pitcher. Mm-hmm. Watch the balls get pitched. If you can, don't get hit in the side of the head. We are talking about high school pitchers here. Some of you are going to be doing JV games. Girls have never pitched before. They're forced into pitching because, the head coach took their only pitcher to varsity. And so now, the shortstop's pitching. Pay attention. Don't get hit. There have been several concussions. And I was just informed yesterday that there was a death. So an umpire was hit and struck in the head in the temple. And 3 days later, died. That's not good. No. You don't really come back from that. So your mask should be off and in your left hand whenever the ball is hit, fair or foul, on walks, stolen bases, or other runner advancements, or whenever talking to a coach. Where should your mask be?
In your left hand.
In your left hand.
Yeah, matter of fact, the only time it should be on your head is basically when a pitch is incoming, and that's it. When you're preparing for it to be incoming and while it's incoming. Otherwise, get it off. It's only there to protect you from that anyway.
Yep.
Take it off.
So I think about it in the, if anything happens to the ball, get it off.
Yeah.
Right. And even on ball 4, you're gonna take your mask off with your left hand and you're going to step out from behind the catcher and watch the girl progress to first base. Okay, Pete, next one.
With no runners or a runner on first base only, you should trail the batter runner in fair territory near the foul line for about 20 feet, third of the way, whenever the ball is put into play.
20 feet's a third of the way. 60-foot base?
Yep. That quick math. I added that. That third is not in the white book. Shoo. That is me doing math on the fly. You're welcome.
That's Pete. Wow. Wow, man.
And besides the fact that our clinicians have drilled the third of the way, they usually don't say 20 feet. They say third of the way because that's actually much easier to visualize than me trying to count 20 feet as I move.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so an important piece here to understand. Two-person mechanics, right? Two-person crew with no runners on or a runner on first base, trail a third of the way. Mm-hmm. With a runner on first, I'm not going to get a third of the way and feel confident that I can get myself back to a good angle should that girl try to go from second to third. And that's the plate umpire's call at third.
Yeah.
And so you're going to trail as far as you can, making sure, to do the things that you're supposed to be helping your partner with, which by the way, You're not calling anything. You're just there to help in case.
On an appeal.
Yeah, something happens. Appeal. What are we looking for? Swipe tag,
yeah, pulled foot. Yep.
Interference, yeah, running lane violation, all kinds of fun things. Mm-hmm. But with that runner at first and she takes off to second and she's a quick little thing, if she's going to go to third, I'm not going to make it 20 feet before I'm going to start to redirect myself and try to keep my eye on what's going on over there, help my partner at first. But I'm going to try to redirect myself pretty quickly to get a good angle and then close the distance at third if she takes off.
Even the fastest, most athletic plate umpires, if the ball is hit sharply to second base, let's say the second base person, and they flip it the first real fast, nobody's getting very far in. And then you
especially if you're supposed to stop, see the play.
It is a little conditional on some situations. But this is the ideal. We're laying out what is the ideal. If you're going to deviate, then you deal with it. It's between you and your God, I guess.
But, that's right.
But if you're going to do it, we are just talking ideal situations.
So Jerry had a good rule of thumb. You want to be stopped. When she throws the ball, when the defender throws the ball, stop.
Because
it doesn't take very long for the ball to get where it's going. And that's when the play happens, when the ball gets where it's going. So when the defense throws the ball, stop. Okay, the next one says, we just covered it, unfortunately. On a base on ball, step out and observe the batter runner moving to first base. You're looking for similar things there. You're going to be looking for look back rule help. You know, just kind of make sure everything's kosher.
Yeah.
You know, just being an extra set of eyes. You just don't want to be standing there doing nothing.
Right.
You know, while the walk
is
happening.
Just like the players have baseball backup, you should have responsibilities on every play.
Yep, that's right. Another thing to think about, too, I missed this when we were talking about the trailing piece. A good way to look at it was given to me again by Jerry yesterday. When do we trail? And the answer is when we don't have any other responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's times, even with nobody on, and it is a possible base hit to the infield, right? So I think they call it ground ball to the infield, right? Base hit to the outfield, ground ball to the infield, they call it. So on a ground ball to the infield, well, what if it's a bunt?
Right.
What if it's a bunt down the third baseline? You better not be trailing because you got to be on the
third
baseline.
Your responsibility is...
Yeah, fair foul, right? So if you don't have anything else you're supposed to be doing, trail. And that could mean runner at second and a base hit to the outfield. You know, you've got job to do, so you're not trailing, right? Mm-hmm. You've got that runner over there. So I like that piece of advice, too, for that pre-pitch preparation that you're doing. It's like, oh... What are my responsibilities? Well, I don't have much. Oh, well, then you're trailing probably, right? So nobody on, runner at first, you're trailing. All right. Enough about that. Don't announce the location of the pitch. Communicate location to the catcher or the batter only when asked.
I said this earlier. I don't know this guy, George. I've never met George, but I wonder if George met me and I didn't know it. this is one. I don't know how I got into this habit. I don't say it, right? Usually. Sometimes I do say it. Some of it's for me sometimes, or I don't know. It's just a weird thing. I will gesture the location of the pitch if I'm umpiring. So like if it missed in, I might. So just imagine, right? I'm set up in the slot. Pitch comes in. I go ball, and I'll take my left hand and I'll wave it like I'm trying to swat a fly low or something, kind of in. I know I shouldn't do that.
So George, that's what we're gonna work on.
George says I shouldn't do it either.
Yeah, so that's what we're gonna work on. The other one that was kind of cool from yesterday, communicate the location to the catcher or the batter only when asked. So this was a fun one. We did a scenario where the pitcher asked, you know, so the ball comes in, you ball it, and the pitcher goes, where was that? Tell the catcher, you know, catcher, tell her it was low. Or catcher, tell her it was inside. And now the catcher is yelling, it was low. So now everybody's mad at the catcher. They're not mad at you because the catcher's the one that said it was a bad pitch. Now, they might be fighting in the dugout after. That's not mine either. That comes from Jerry, too. So, but anyway, but don't yell out, it was in, it was out, you know, it was low, it was whatever. Because the coach might have been upset and thought it was in. And you didn't have it in. You had it down.
Yeah.
And now, not only did you not call it correctly, but you didn't even call it correctly based on the why you thought it was wrong.
Right.
You know, don't get into that with them. You know, let the catcher know. And I'll tell you. It's happened to me several times where it's like, well, where was that one? Catch? This is getting old. We're not playing that game. You moved it a foot. You know where it was when you caught it, and then you moved it a foot to get it in the strike zone. So stop, you know. And then, of course, that's a fine line for the catchers in NCAA because you only get one shot. The whole team only gets one shot at questioning judgment. It's like, you better be careful how you ask that question, catch. If it's questioning my judgment, you get the one shot. All right. And I've never had to call that, and I hope I never do. But probably will this year. It's especially on the assistant coach thing. NCAA says assistant coaches can't come out of the dugout and ask anything. And it's like, and if that happens, it's immediate ejection. I'm like, oh, no. Man, I hope they know about that.
Yeah.
I hope they studied the rules real well. Because I don't want to be filling that paperwork out. All right, Pete, what's the next one?
When the ball is put into play near the foul line, get into the best position for judging fair foul. This is usually straddling the line or line extended.
Yeah. Okay. So line extended would be when the ball is put into play near the foul line. So now we're talking about a bunt if we're going extended, right? Because if it's out in the outfield.
Yeah, you're not calling a catch by the left fielder from behind the plate.
That's right. Yeah, you need to get out there, right?
Yeah.
And then this is a place where you don't take a parallel path to the fly ball. This is a place where if it's close to the line, you run up the line. Right?
Yeah.
You need to straddle that line and watch. And then when the ball is getting there, stop. Indicate where it's touched, fair or foul, and then make your call.
Yeah, the parallel path is for being able to judge the catch, no catch, which is your primary responsibility for a ball not here near the foul line. In this one, you want the fair foul to take a little bit of precedence then in your head. It's 1 and 1A. And this time, 1 is fair foul. 1A is, any of the – maybe the incidentals of the catch of – oh, it was close. She dove for it. Was it caught beforehand or whatever? Just do your best, I guess, if you're hustling out there. You probably have that good angle anyway.
Yep, for sure. So on foul fly balls that might be caught near the fence, get to a position at the fence line.
I assume they mean, I guess either way you could probably get there. I was thinking popped up back to like that a catcher might get or a first base, you can get kind of close. But even a left fielder, I guess if there's a fence going down the line and the left fielder is like running into the against the fence, you do your best to run down, and you can get to the fence.
Yeah,
I think to see the fence line.
So if you think about our days at Kilbourn High School when we were coaching, and we had the fan protection net.
Yeah,
And it extended pretty far. It went past third base, so it's on the third base side. It went past third base, further into the outfield. And if that ball's over there, and that you got a really good shortstop that sprinted over there, and she's trying to make a catch, you need to know if it touched that net or not. And so in order to do that, you need to get over to the fence. But I think you're right. Most of the time this happens with a pop-up that the catcher's going to try to get, and you want to open up with that catcher, right? Don't let her truck you. Do you watch the ball or do you watch the catcher?
Initially, I watch the catcher to get set and then move to the ball.
Yeah, a couple of things. One, you want to be out of her way. And two, you don't want to get hit in the side of the head with her helmet when she throws it, right? So you're watching her. And then once she picks up the ball, then you can pick up the ball if you're out of the way. And if it's going to be back by the fence, get over there because you need to know if it ticks that fence or not before she catches it. All right. So don't give vocal of, and I think it means or.
I think it's typo. Yeah.
Yep. Don't give vocal or visual signals on obvious foul balls. Pet peeve.
Yeah.
For sure.
The ball's slammed back, straight back, up over the fence, into the cars.
Yep.
You don't need to say foul ball. Everyone knew.
That's right. So we're not supposed to make up mechanics that aren't in the manual. But if I were to make up a mechanic, it would be this one. The mechanic for an obvious out-of-play foul ball is to reach in your ball bag, grab another one, and hand it to the catcher. Yeah. That's the new approved mechanic. Do not go, foul ball! If it's close to the line, on a long fly or something like that, and you need to tell grandma in left field that it was foul, let her know.
Yeah.
But anything that goes foul out of play or straight back to the fence and smacks the back of the fence. Yeah, we're just not doing that. Just don't yell foul ball. Everybody knows. Okay, what's the next one?
This is another. This one's actually can be mildly controversial as well. Do not pick up bats, catcher's masks, or any other equipment. There's a lot of people that think that the umpire's responsibility is to, if there's a bat dropped from the right-handed batter's box, it's kind of in that third base line coming home, they'll pick it up and wing it at the fence or something and get it out of the way or hold it, during the play to get it out of the way for player safety. And it's like, you understand where their heart is. And then people sometimes devolve into discussions about, well, your insurance doesn't cover if you were to throw that bat and someone were to trip on it later and your liabilities. And let's not worry about some of that stuff and just and focus on the positive aspect of it. And it's just like if the bat is bunted and the ball is bunted and the bat is dropped, and the bat is still and the ball rolls into the bat, we don't care because the bat has become part of the playing surface.
Yep.
The bat on the ground there is part of the playing surface at this point. The runner would have to avoid it just like they would have to avoid a hole that began to get dug by right-handed batters you know, digging in their self and getting set. It's part of the surface. If somebody else wants to move it, they can move it, but that's not you.
Yeah. Great question here. Sidebar, everyone. So Pete just gave the example that the bat dropped becomes part of the field. So let's assume for a moment that the bat was dropped and the ball rolled into it and contacted the bat and then rolled foul, and mm-hmm. the catcher picked it up in foul territory. Fair ball, foul ball?
Foul ball.
Foul ball.
Because it was part of the field, it's the same as if it hit a rock.
Yeah.
Or a divot.
Yep, exactly. Okay, now the chances of that happening are pretty slim because mm-hmm. in order for it to have enough momentum to roll foul, it would have to be going pretty quick.
Yeah.
And to get the bat in front of it would be, wow, she's very fast.
Yeah, and usually a bunt, a lot of times you're not going to have the situation where a bunt has the ball roll into the bat anyway.
Right. It'd be more of a slap type
thing,
right? Yeah,
it's kind of rare.
Yep. Okay, just a few more here. I was going to say also, on foul balls, you know, you'll see the catcher pick up the bat and mm-hmm. hand it to the person. I can tell you that Otterbein softball, one of their tenets is the on deck batter's getting that bat.
Yeah,
they'll sprint out there and fight the catcher for it to hand it to our player. But so I wonder if it was some of that, you know, after the foul ball, you know, don't grab the catcher's mask and hand it back to her. Don't grab the bat and hand it back to her. I think for player safety, I will kick a bat out of the way. I think I will. If it's if I know there's going to be a sliding play or a play at home and the bat's laying in the runner's lane, I'm sorry, I should not call it a runner's lane. I'll say the could be in the way of the base runner. I'll probably kick it. I probably will. After we get through these, I got one more for us that you and I talked about this week. So the next one is record all substitutes and then report them to the opposing head coach. So this is an important one too, and brought up yesterday at the clinic. Don't go looking in the 14th row of the stands trying to find the scorekeeper for the other team. And more than just convenience and timing, it was pointed out, Jerry, I think again said this one, the coach who made the change, the substitute, has now made a strategic adjustment to his game. The opposing coach might want to make a reciprocal adjustment.
Right.
And so the opposing coach is the one that needs to know. He can let the scorekeeper know, but the coach is the one that it matters, because there's a game going on here and he's responsible for, you know, helping his team win it. So let the head coach know. And what's the last one here, Pete?
On deck batters are to stay in the area in front of their dugouts, including between innings or pitching changes. So the on deck batter is one of the only people that is allowed out of the dugout in the offense. You got the batter and the on deck batter. How many people outside? Just one.
One.
So that's that person. And they have a very defined area. There's an on-deck circle. That's a little bit of gray area. Some places don't have that in general. You know, you got an area there getting kicked around. We know what they mean. It's in front of the dugout. That's where they should be. It's a general area we could draw out. They shouldn't be wandering around. They shouldn't be down the line. They shouldn't be doing the other stuff. It's just a good reminder. And I think the fact that it's brought up means that there's probably too many times between pitching changes. Where are they going? What are they doing? If they're out there, are they like crouched behind the thing looking for movement on pitches? No, stay out of the way. Stay in your area.
Yeah, they're trying to get timing, all kinds of fun stuff.
Yeah.
In between innings in the summertime, you'll see entire teams get out and swing bats, mm-hmm. you know, in between innings. And it's like, no, get in the dugout. What are you doing? Come on, coach. You know, get them in there. All right, so those are the ones from the manual themselves. But Pete, you and I were talking about a video that we saw on social media this week where the umpire, this was an NCAA game, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it was. And the umpire's in the slot, the pitcher's in a position to pitch, the catcher is in a position to catch, and the batter is in a position to hit.
Yeah.
But the catcher is looking to the dugout.
Yeah.
Possibly, it appears to be trying to get a signal.
Mm-hmm. Which is weird, because if they're trying to get a signal, how does the pitcher?
Yeah. So what happens next, though, is the pitcher separates hands and starts their pitch. Which, by the way, what is the start of a pitch?
Separation of hands.
Right. Yeah. So she separates her hands and starts the pitch, and the umpire immediately yells, "Dead ball!" Steps out from behind the catcher. Dead ball! Dead ball! Dead ball! And so the question is, you know, would you have issued time in this instance? I was quick to answer. I thought the batter had requested time after the pitch had stopped.
First time I saw the video, I thought so too.
And I said, no. Once the pitcher starts, you know, we're going. Especially in the rules today. You know, it's like, no, you don't get to play that game. You know, mm-hmm. she only has 20 seconds. You got 10 seconds. You got, nope, that's how we're doing. We're going. But the reason that the umpire called time was the catcher was not looking.
Still not looking. Umpire called time, wandered out, was doing whatever. Catcher was still looking to the dugout.
Yep, the catcher didn't even turn to look at the umpire to say, why'd you say no pitch? Right. Why'd you yell time? The catcher was just locked in on whatever was going on in the dugout. And so this is a question, and you know what? Hit us up on the website with your answer to this.
Umpiringfastpitchsoftball.com.
That's the one. Hit us up there. But so my thing is I probably wouldn't have killed it anyway. And Pete said, so you just let the catcher get hit? And that's part of it. Some of what was on social media was, would you try, essentially what the umpire did was avoided a passed ball.
Mm-hmm.
And so she impacted the game, you know, like the offense would have had the opportunity to have a passed ball here. And the defense would have had an opportunity to have a player hit with a ball, you know, and I know they're women, they're not kids. I'm a girl dad. I'm sorry, you know, but there's safety. We're in charge of safety too. So I'm pretty sure.
And plus your own safety. The ball comes in, she's not looking. The person likely to hit.
Yeah, she's supposed to
include you.
Yeah, that's right. She's supposed to catch that thing, mm-hmm. right? And so if she's not looking, she might not catch it. So I believe, and now that I've thought about it and pre-pitch planned it, until somebody tells me different, I'm going to say to the catcher, pitch is coming, catch. I probably wouldn't kill it, but I would communicate with the catcher. I don't know if that's right. I really don't. I don't know. What do you think, Pete?
Yeah, I feel like I might have killed it. Like, I understand why the person did it once I noticed that it wasn't the batter. First of all, yeah, if the batter had tried to call time and the pitcher had separated her hands, tough luck. You are not getting time granted. And for that, I understand it. And I don't know. I don't know. I think I like your answer of saying, you know, trying to give the catcher a heads up. Like, hey, pitch is incoming. And then I would probably just brace myself really hard.
Yes, this is going to hurt. Yeah, the hope is that the pitch comes and the batter hits it. That's the hope.
Right.
The hope is she hits it and the catcher goes, what happened? You know, that's the best possible outcome for that. But nobody's going to get hurt in that situation. But yeah, that's a rough one. So let us know what you think. Umpiringfastpitchsoftball.com. And I think that's what we have for today,
Pete. And that is the end. That is the end of the section. And that is the end of this episode.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.